Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spark Radio Show, filled with strategies, possibilities, actions, resources, and knowledge that may be the spark of a better solution to ignite a positive change in your life. The number to call if you have questions for Melanie or any of our guests is area code 347-215-8390. Now, here's your host, Ms. Melanie.
Well, hello and welcome back to Spark Radio. I am your host, Miss Melanie, and it is indeed my pleasure to invest time with you to offer you strategies, possibilities, actions, resources, and knowledge that may indeed be the spark to ignite that positive change in your life. Last week, my guest was author and strategist Steve Van Remortel, and we got to talk about his new book, Stop Selling Vanilla Ice Cream. So if you missed last week's show, take a listen. It's there for you in the recordings in that section. This week, I have another Steve, also committed to the talent side of business, the people side of business. Steve has written two books. We'll talk probably about both of them at some point tonight. We'll start off with his work as an executive coach and the People Project. And so get ready for some good stories, some good ideas, and good resources. Welcome, Steve.
Thank you, Melanie. It's good to be here with you this evening.
It's a pleasure and an honor to have you. As I do with all of my guests, would you please let my listeners know a little bit about who Steve Leswell is?
Well, I'll give you that high-level version. I spent about 20 years in pastoral ministry before moving into a radio career path, which I affectionately call my street-level MBA program for a decade. It was a fast track through radio broadcasting industry. After about a year and a half as a rookie account executive, I was selected and promoted to become the general sales manager of the number one billing station for Clear Channel in the Oklahoma City market. And then a couple of years later, I was recruited by Cox Radio Tulsa and moved over and continued with a news talk format, again, the number one billing station in the Tulsa market. Went through an executive leadership program a couple of years into it with Cox Enterprise, the parent company out of Atlanta, Georgia. And during that time, I had the privilege of being an executive leadership in the executive leadership program with the company, which meant I had access to an executive coach for the better part of a year. Did an outward bound backpacking excursion for professionals, which was a great experience, and then spent a couple of weeks in Atlanta on a leader lab. And then the year after that, I was promoted to station manager, which meant I had crossed department line in five different properties to give leadership to. And then was promoted to station manager for a contemporary Christian radio music format that we had converted a rock station to contemporary Christian. So you can just imagine the shock on some of those listeners when they turned their radio on the way to work and they couldn't hear their headbanging music anymore and they were listening to something that was a worship song towards God. But that continued on for about 6 months. And then at the end of 2007... going into 2008, and you might remember the economy at that time was beginning to shake a bit. They were looking for some significant budget cut opportunities, and a Friday afternoon visit with me gave me that information in about 5 minutes. Shock and awe is what I called it back then when I realized I would not be coming back on Monday. And what I learned later was that they were actually going to flip the contemporary FM station to make it a simulcast for the Heritage News Talk AM so they could have an AM-FM KRMG. So then I had to figure out, well, what's next? I mean, everybody's had a jolt of lemon juice, and that was one of mine. So I took about 30 days off to figure out what was going on and try to get my feet under me. and then decided to pursue executive coaching as a career path and as a business. So I launched my company, Next Level Executive Coaching, in January of 2008. So almost 5 years ago, and have not looked back. I love what I do, and count it a privilege to work with people.
There's a lot we could talk about in there, Steve. Oh, my goodness. It's a wonderful example of how life doesn't always take us exactly where we think it's going to take us or exactly the way that we plan for it to take us. And so it's what we do with that on the journey as we, mm-hmm. we go through life. And there was more there than what I had read on your website. So that was
right.
very interesting. And I think one of the pieces, too, to take a, that I want to take a look at is how you handled that adversity. That when I love the way you phrased that, everybody's had some lemon juice. How, when you got that news, because people do, I mean, you go to work one day and you find out that's your last day. And it can be debilitating, it can be challenging, it can be inspiring. And so where did you turn to move yourself forward from that point?
You're exactly right. The familiarity with that part of my story has happened so many times here in the last several years in particular. And, you know, the unfortunate thing is that it seems like that business leaders are not really sure how to handle that sometimes. And so the hard part for me was not the business decision itself. I mean, we can agree to disagree on the wisdom there. But the tough part, obviously, was that the way it was executed. And just that late Friday afternoon, it was before Labor Day holiday weekend, the office was reasonably quiet. I remember later, a relationship guy, and so, you know, I'm packing my office on a Friday afternoon. So, you know, one thing I did was I kind of gave myself permission to have an enforced sabbatical. I just made the decision that for 30 days I would not make any major decisions and I would begin to just wait and see what was next. And I know it's not quite as linear and clean as that. Forgiveness is a big deal once you get past the shock of it and understanding that, you know, it really wasn't a performance issue. It was a business decision. What helped me was the people. Of course, I had a lot of support from my wife and my family. But one thing that I came away from that with and made a commitment to do and actually followed through on it a few months later was I had one person that called me that very day within a matter of a few hours. And Lucy was a consultant for us, did not work directly with the radio station, but when she caught wind of it, she picked up her phone and called me. And the power of that reach out and touch phone call is still a part of that story that's very memorable to me. And I think the challenge that we have when we bump into the stories of others, when those sort of things happen, is we may feel like, well, I don't know what to say. So we just kind of avoid people. And so one of my commitments, like I said, was to whenever I heard of a situation like that, was to run to them, towards them, and pick up the phone and make a phone call if I couldn't get to them, whatever is appropriate. And just let them know that I cared. So that's one part of it. You know, the other part was I'm a faith-based follower of Jesus Christ, and so my relationship with God is foundational to me. And the other thing that I'm really big on is journaling. And as we get into this conversation a little further, maybe we'll also stumble back onto some of the things that I use in my coaching today in encouraging my clients to create space for consistent reflection. So I've journaled for decades. I started journaling when I was a kid in high school, and over the years developed a process, a methodology to journaling for spiritual formation, and I've transferred that into my coaching practice. And so I journaled through that time. I began to reach out to people. When it began to be decision-making time after that first couple of weeks, I just began to reach out to people and have conversation. And that's actually where the idea of executive coaching came from. There was a gentleman who was owned a consulting firm that Cox Radio used for customer-focused selling. And I called Steve Marks and was talking to him. And like I said, he was maybe an elbow length. He wasn't real close in a relationship, but we knew each other well enough that we had a conversation. And he's the one that said, "Have you thought about executive coaching?" He knew me well enough to know, you know, that I was a nurturer and that in my sales management style, it was all about developing the people. And so that's how I actually ended up moving in that direction.
You brought up a number of very powerful points, and I was reflecting on the situation where my husband faced the same thing, walked into work, and they were cutting staff, and I don't know how many months before that we had talked about who moved my cheese and change and the difference when it's your choice versus someone else's, and very often the decision isn't personal. It's not a reflection of your work. It's a reflection of, okay, if we have to cut money, what do we cut? And so I remember him saying that his supervisor had to tell him that he was letting him go. My husband's very calm, generally speaking, anyway, but he was his boss was very surprised he didn't yell and scream. And now he's like, well, you know, it is what it is. That is what it is kind of thinking around when you can't change a situation. You have a lot of control over how you think about it, how you act on it, the choices that you make around it. And the other thing that I think is encouraging for people that you brought up is that when you know someone who's in that situation, and often it can be uncomfortable, you don't know what to say, but just reaching out and saying, hey, you know, I heard, I'm here, just want to let you know, it can really mean a lot, because often the people do feel isolated or embarrassed or frustrated or any of those negative low energy emotions in that situation. And then being open to that, the person who asked you about executive coaching. So when you started down that road for executive coaching, because you did evaluate your strengths and your passion, passions are something I talk about often here on Spark, that when you do what you love, discover what gets you jazzed. That's part of your purpose and what you're meant to do here, and you can do it like no one else. So on your journey to becoming an executive coach, I'm sure there were additional adventures that led to the seeds or the inspiration for the People Project. Where did that seed come from for that book?
Well, the fun thing about the title of it was I had one of my clients was a VP in a Fortune 500 company, and one day he called me up and he said, "Hey, I've got a project for you." And I remember distinctly thinking, okay, are you talking about a coaching engagement or are you talking about a person? And, you know, is that what it's come to, that people are projects? But, you know, the People Project is really about, you know, a project is a planned undertaking. And, you know, the truth is that we are a bit of a project. We are a work still under remodeling, transition, transformation. And that's actually the really good news, that we're not stuck, or we don't have to remain stuck where we are. That as good as it may be where I am today, there's something better yet to be had. And so the People Project came out of my efforts to begin to collect my thoughts and share stories and what I perceive to be principles or It's actually a guide for changing behavior. And then the way I approach leadership development is if we have self-limiting behavior, it's our responsibility to change that and get the help to change it. When we change that, that allows our performance to improve. And then with improved performance, we can have a positive influence on life in the workplace, at home, wherever we go. So that's the idea of the People Project. It's a guide for changing behavior in order to grow our influence as leaders.
So for those leaders who are looking to develop their teams, develop their people to have that positive influence, the People Project, that's a great story for where the title comes from, too. And I think about that. I have an 11-year-old who's entering that adolescent brain development stage, and there are days where there's a statement that comes back to me that my former students said to me that when we had our son, that he was my brain project. I said, no, he's my son, or my brain experiment, either one. And I said, oh, no. Although when we look at the development and transformation of the people in our lives as a process, and as a project that has timelines and has actions that need to be taken, it's a very different process than feeling helpless or frustrated or giving up on somebody who we think will never get it. And so how, for those leaders who are working in that realm of influencing others and they have those people projects, where do you suggest they start?
Well, you know, I believe that the beginning place is I have to recognize, where am I? You know, there's that reality of there's, I guess maybe there's three questions that I like to think about, and maybe this will help answer that question. So even in thinking about how do I help as a leader, how do I help develop my people, if that's the question. You know, the first question is, what got you here? And so for me to be able to understand the influences, the behavior style, maybe even to some degree my personality, my strengths, my story. I'm really big on story. And it is my conviction that everybody has a story. And when we learn to listen to our story, we will learn from it, and when we learn from it, we can lead out of it. So kind of the little theme song is, you know, your story, listen, learn, and lead. And so when we do that, then that's what actually accelerates our development as people. And, you know, I kind of like to talk about people development as much as leadership development and use those words interchangeably, because if we accept the fact that everybody has influence, for better or for worse, then, in fact, everybody is a leader. It's not a positional thing. It's a human thing. And it's about relationships. So, you know, when we're figuring out a personal growth, personal development plan, that first question is, what got you here? You know, what has shaped my story? What are the influences on my story? What have I done that has worked? What have I done that has not worked? Who are the people that have helped shape who I am? And when you begin to think about what got you here, it kind of opens up this journey from here to there. And when I think about moving from here to there, there are three things that kind of come to my mind there too, not to get into the triads here, but the first thing is, what got you here will not get you there. And, you know, it's I'm sitting here myself on my own journey. I'm looking at my company, and I'm evaluating as I finish up 2012 and finish up my fifth year, and I'm recognizing that I've had a good five-year run But if I'm going to have a greater reach and have more influence and make a greater contribution to the world, to the people that are in this world that I can reach, then something's going to have to change. So what got me here can only get me here, and I'm going to level off if I don't do something different. So what got me here won't get me there. And the second thing about here and there is, while here is celebrated, there is greater still. And it is looking towards something that is another level of achievement, another level of contribution, success. And when I use success, I think it's very important that we take the time to define that for ourselves. There's no question that there are a lot of voices in our world that want to define what success is today. But as people who are responsible and steward for our lives and our gifts, our talents, we have to define what personal success is. And so we celebrate here, so I'm throwing virtual high fives out there, and here's one for you, Mel. We celebrate here, but meanwhile we know there is greater. And here's the kind of the kicker. In order to get there, something must end or we'll be stuck here. And that's the developmental opportunity. The question is, what has to end so I will not be stuck here? And, of course, the interesting thing about there is as soon as you get there, it becomes here. And so it is a lifelong journey. And, of course, anybody that's ever spoken about personal development and growth and all that, they, you know, I don't have anybody to quote right now, but they talk about a commitment to being a lifelong learner. And that's really it. So the first question is, what got you here? Before I go to the second question, any thoughts there?
No, actually, I was trying to do something real interesting I've never done before, which is to tweet while we're doing the interview. So you'll have
okay.
No interesting things to read when we get done, as I'm keeping up
right.
with it. Like, ooh, that's really good. Oh, I like that. Oh, and so I'm thinking that as I'm trying to keep it in the 140 characters or less and keep
uh-huh.
it available. I love the idea of defining what success means to you. And absolutely love the quote about how something must end or we will be stuck here. And then once
mm-hmm.
we move there, it becomes here. I think that it's very, very powerful, and it's very easy to get stuck in that
yeah.
the busyness and the sameness. And if we stay there, the world around us is changing. People's needs are changing. And
mm-hmm.
the commitment to lifelong learning allows us to continue to grow and develop. So you're
right.
absolutely singing my song, so to speak. And
yes.
and so my listeners are going, okay, she does. Yeah, we've heard that from Melanie. Yes, mm-hmm, good. So the first
right.
question is, what got you here, what got you there?
Yep, the first question is, what got you here?
Okay.
And that's a kind of obviously a reflective evaluation. The second question is, what does there look like for you?
Okay.
You know, we have that, and let me just say this, what does there look like? I've been challenged with the idea of 5-year, 10-year goals all of my life. I feel like I'm more of a Abraham kind of guy, going without knowing, is what Scripture refers to when they talk about Abraham. When he was called, he went, not knowing where he was going. And to me, it's hard for me to say in 5 years this is where I'm going to be, but there does have to be some kind of a picture of there, or it's pretty hard to begin to move in that direction. You know, it's easy to put that into another aspect of story. If we're going to take a vacation, we figure out where we're going to go and what does there look like for us. So that's the second question. So what got you here? The second question is, what does there look like? And the third question is, how will you get there? How will you get there? And that's the personal development journey from here to there in three pretty simple questions, but that are pretty profound questions.
Yes, they are. And they're sometimes challenging to answer when you're trying to do it on your own. because right. all you can see in your forest are the trees immediately in front of your face. So the one of the powerful advantages of coaching is to have that outside perspective, to ask questions, to guide thinking, and to help you discover the knowing that you have that you may not realize is already there.
Yeah. So out of all of that, probably the biggest question is really what must end if I'm going to get there?
That's the scary part. What do we want to let go of so that we can have our hands open for what's next?
And that can be as, you know, I mean, there's lots of ways that question can be answered. I mean, there's a lot of ways. It could be something as, I start to say, as simple, but I'm going to take that back. It could be I learn how to listen. So I'm going to, what has to end is being a poor listener. It could be what has to end is I'm going to stop finishing other people's sentences for them. It could be, you know, I'm going to stop thinking of myself in a negative way. It could be that I'm going to stop spending more money than I make. But something has to end. And it can be a behavior. And, of course, then we can put new habits in place. But it is leadership development. Next level leadership development is about engaging in a process of change, which leads to changed behavior so that I can expand or grow my influence.
Can you repeat that last sentence again?
Yeah, basically when I think about next level leadership development, it's about engaging in a process of change. If it's process driven, it's not linear, but it's, you know, it's process oriented. And I think that's one of the incredible values of having a coach or having a mentor that does more than tell me the ropes on how to get things done in the company. But I'm talking about developing us as people, the way we think, the way we behave, the way that we communicate, those kind of what I call core skills, used to be called soft skills. The core skills of today's leader are people skills. So it's engaging in the process of change, which allows me to change behavior in order to expand and grow my influence.
And it's interesting, too, when there are leaders or executives who want their people to change and aren't willing to look in the mirror.
Right. Yeah, and, you know, the reality there is if in order to expand my leadership, I have to lead at home in my own life first. I mean home by leading self before I can to have positive leadership respect with others.
And that is worth its weight in gold. If people hear nothing else tonight, those are for people who are in those positions, so whether it's a C-level position, a team lead, a parent, that it's so important to lead self first.
Well, I mean, let's just take a second to think about leadership development from a definition standpoint. Leadership, Mr. Webster or somebody like him would tell us that it's simply the ability to lead, guide, direct, or influence people. All right, so my key word out of that definition is not lead, guide, direct, it's influence, and of course the thing that's got the highlighter all over it is people. I went to a conference this last week. It was a sustainable enterprise conference. It's talking about the triple bottom line, you know, that theory that was put forward back in the late 90s. And it's about people, profit, and planet. And what I was fascinated with is that the content was probably weighted at least 90, maybe 95% towards planet. A tip of the hat to profit and another tip of the hat to people. But leadership is the ability to lead, guide, and direct or influence, not machines, not, you know, economic systems. It's people. And what I walked away thinking was, Okay, if we get the people part right, then we can sustain and create profit. And I think, obviously, profit's a good thing. I mean, that's how we are able to pay better wages and increase production and innovation and all that good stuff. And we can also take care of the planet that we're stewards of. But if we don't take care of the people, oh, my goodness. And that's the core of what it's about.
Yes, then everything begins to unravel.
Yeah. So going again to define leadership development, then that's the first part, the ability to lead, guide, direct, or influence people. But here's the meaning of development. It's the process of changing and becoming stronger, more successful, more advanced. ... or helping someone to change in this way. Isn't that great?
That is.
That's a dictionary definition of development. The process of changing and becoming stronger, more successful, more advanced, or helping someone to change in this way. And that's what leadership development's about. First, developing myself so I have greater influence over my own self. And when I show up differently and I lead myself well, then I'm going to be invited to lead others, and they're going to accept my leadership, my influence. And that's the other thing. You know, the question is, do we want to have control or have influence? And every time we go for control, we're going to create conflict and unnecessary stress, and we're going to have people problems because people were not meant to be controlled. And last I knew, there's hardly anybody that's got any sense about them since they came out of the womb that wants to be told what to do.
That's right.
I mean, from the day we were born, we're pretty much saying, I want it my way.
Yes.
So it's about influence, not control. And I know there's, maybe it almost feels like splitting hairs there, but there's an emotional difference between exerting influence or having influence, I prefer to say, than trying to control.
Well, and while you say splitting hairs, from the perspective of being on the receiving end of as an employee with a boss in whatever job, the difference mm-hmm. between influence and control emotionally is huge. Because one of my favorite definitions of stress is by neuroscientist Dr. David Diamond, who says that stress is the physical and emotional response when you perceive you have no control.
Mm-hmm.
So when someone's trying to control you and you don't feel like you have control, your stress level skyrockets. And so then we get into all the health issues and the increased medical costs and the impact on families. And so from that perspective, related to control and stress, for leaders to recognize that it's also a bottom line issue if they can understand the difference between influence and control.
Yes. Yeah, I agree.
And we were okay. Let me see where we were headed as I interrupted you, because that, and for maybe it's just partly for me. I share the story often that my parents never, you know, the index finger, three fingers pointed at you, and you're shaking the finger at people and
right.
saying you should blah 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 blah. My parents never did that, but I don't know when it happened. At some point, somebody did that to me, and as soon as someone starts that, the hair stands up on the back of my neck. And I
yeah.
like digging my heels in, and I have that you can't make me kind of response.
Yep.
And so that I recognize that's very much a button for me. It's
yeah.
wanting to be independent, and I think you're right. I don't know anyone who wants to be told how and when and where to do everything.
Mm-hmm.
So we were going down the road. Oh, we'd answered the three. We had the three questions of we were defining next level leadership development, and I love those definitions, particularly of development. I think that's one of the things that caught my eye when we were first connecting, Steve, was your title of the people developer. And I have been a people development specialist for, I want to say, maybe 8 to 10 years now. And so that was really exciting because that's a term that I don't see often. Can you talk a little bit about how that title, The People Developer, came to be for you?
The People Developer, you know, I think since I was a kid in high school, it was all about the relationships. And so to be a developer of people, I was trying to find a way to explain what I did without using worn-out words. And even to this point, people are still a little uncertain. If you say you're an executive coach, we're still just trying to figure out how that – we understand that in sports and athletics and in the fine arts and lots of, you know, other areas. But business, for some reason, we're still – I mean, we're a lot further than we were. But an executive coach, now, what do you do?
Steve? I think we lost Steve. There's a little crackling, and I think the line is gone. So hopefully, Steve, if you're still here, there we go. Yeah, he did drop the call. So I'm guessing he's going to be calling back in a moment or two. So while Steve is dialing back in, if you have questions for Steve about executive coaching or about his process or about the book, you can call 347-215-8390, or you can type your question into the chat room that is open at blogtalkradio.com. /Spark, and you'll find my show with Steve. So either call in your question or type in the chat. Hi, Steve. Glad to have you back.
Thank you. That was kind of an interruption, wasn't it?
That was. All of a sudden, it was crackling. I thought, oh, no, I hope you weren't hit by lightning or something odd, and it was just a fluke in the system.
Right. It was. All right.
I was trying to remember where you were when all of a sudden the loud crackling occurred.
Talking a little bit about
about how in business we're just now beginning to try to figure out what coaching looks like in business.
Right. Yeah. So you know, there's good news that I think we're recognizing, and here's what I see, and this kind of gets off a little bit of the leadership development thing, but I think the context that we're in our world. And in the world of business, but not just business, it's even within our social structure. I mean, we are no longer an agriculture community or society where grandparents and parents and children are kind of all within a square mile of each other, and that generational influence is being handed down. And, you know, we just have a lot of things that are working against that kind of influence from one generation to another. But you step into the business world, and you know, this is what I see going on, and I know it's true because this is part of my story. You know, there was a budget cut, and so that meant that somebody, trust me, I was working, so somebody had to pick up a lot of slack. And I affectionately say that we no longer are cutting flesh, we're now cutting bone. And in the world of business, it's just there's a lot of cutting going on. And then after cutting people, then we cut leadership development budgets, and then we cut training budgets. And so now we have, you know, a very lean machine, and it's thin-lined. Everybody's being asked to do more with less. In addition to that, we have a group of baby boomers who thought they were at the finish line who have now woken up to the harsh reality that they've got a few more years to put in. We can talk about their level of engagement. We could talk about whether or not they're good leaders in the first place. We could talk about, even if they are a good leader, do they have a process or energy or time to develop people under their watch? And so the whole business environment is such that it's increasingly somebody looks up from their desk and there's a line out their door and they're waiting for their next project up date or the next financial report, and who has time to see the people? And so leadership development, I think, is extremely important for our nation, for business, and for families.
Absolutely. To be able to, huge connections that you made with losing some of the generational connectedness, I think that's part of how social media has exploded to partly fill that gap, because we don't have generations living together or closely. Even growing up with my grandparents, my husband's grandparents, really close. So we don't have that. Who do you call when you're trying to figure out, you know, is a warm 7-Up I need to give my child? How do I need to deal with this fever? A lot of that information was passed down. So you have LinkedIn groups that you can go to get information and resource. And then in companies, one of the things that came to mind as you were talking about getting cutting down to the bone and people doing more and being more stressed, and you're so in this almost survival mode with the business, going back to what you talked about before, with your business being in where you are, if you keep doing what you're doing, you're going to stay where you are. Well, in order to compete in such a fast-changing world, learning and development is critical to compete, because if you look up, what people wanted a year ago is not necessarily what they want now. And if you don't have people trained and developed to deliver that, then you find yourself slipping further and further behind.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. I agree. And, you know, it affects innovation. I mean, when are you most creative? When you're under stress or when you've got a little breathing room?
Absolutely. So, you've got to have the breathing room.
Yeah. So it's
And time to step away from the project, to actually get up from the desk, have a conversation with people.
Right.
Connect with people. The companies that are growing are the companies that are getting the message that you're talking about, the importance of developing the next generation of leaders, of developing your staff in multiple areas of the company. And then, yeah, giving them, if you want innovation, understanding how innovation happens. And it isn't because you sit three people in a room and say, okay, now innovate. Doesn't work that way.
Right. A little bit off topic, but there's a great book by Scott Belsky. It's entitled Making Ideas Happen. And basically, you know, he's talking about how to overcome the obstacles between vision and reality. And, you know, there's really rarely a shortage of ideas. The issue is getting the ideas into play, executed on. And so he says, you know, that once you have your ideas, you've got to have some kind of a process or organization, a way to manage the details. So that's kind of a given, a project management, quote unquote, way. But the second thing was community and the ability to bring multiple voices to the table and be a part of the conversation around it and being open to that. And then the third part was leadership capability. And so, he's singing my song because that's just so much about what I'm about, is developing the leadership capability. And because just even looking at that community, if you don't have the ability to engage people and build a place of trust and engage with open-ended questions and not have to be the command and control type of leader, but really can let the release, you know, not try to control but have influence. The ideas are going to be there, they just won't be executed on, and the innovation will slide. Just another ramification of underdeveloped leadership.
And thank you for sharing. That's a book that hadn't been on my list. I said, my family, we laughed that we could start a library all our own from our house, which is a good thing. And it's good to have connection and ideas to where do we go for, where do we find good resources. Speaking of which, Steve, what are you reading right now?
Right now, I just finished up Making Ideas Happen. I have a copy of Bruce Weinstein's book, Ethical Intelligence, It's five principles for untangling your toughest problems at work and home and beyond. So those are a couple. And then there's another one entitled Success. And I'm trying to remember. Let me... The subtitle on that is How We Can Reach Our Goals, and it's written by Heidi Grant Halverson. And it's kind of a scientific, research-driven approach to the different ways that we have goals and the different types of goals, the science behind goal setting and why sometimes we should have a certain type of goal and another time. And then so then the last one I've been mentioned is written by Jim Whitt, and it's one of those fable storybooks, but I love it because he's talking about the power of purpose. It's entitled Writing for the Brand, subtitled The Power of Purposeful Leadership. And Jim's message is, you know, basically that if we have purposeful organizations and then help people find and connect their purpose to the purpose of the organization, then it's, you know, Katie bar the door, we can accomplish a lot.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for sharing those.
You're welcome.
I always like to, as I said, add good resources to my list. And so I do want to segue for a minute and talk about your other book as well, which is The Story, right?
The Journey?
The Journey. I see. I knew if I didn't go to Amazon and look at it, I was going to miss it. Because that book is different from The People Project, and yet you still had a passion that led you to write that book. What led you to write The Journey?
Well, The Journey is personal notes from the father. And as I mentioned earlier, I have been a lifelong journal writer. And somewhere along the way, I began to develop a method to how I journaled. And this is coming from a faith-based worldview. And so what I began to do was write with three different voices. And I use three different colored pens. So this is the method behind how I journal. The black pen is your voice to you. And basically it's historical information. If you were writing in a diary, you would write everything in black. It's the context that will help make sense of the other things that we're going to write. It's what's going on. It's high level. It's bullet points. It's just, oh, yeah, I remember that because I was at the farm or I was there. So anyway, black is historical. It's context. It's your voice to you. The second pen represents the second voice, which is a green pen, and it is your voice to God. And, you know, if there's a listener who wants to use this method, then it's your voice to someone that is an authority, that you can ask your questions. And so in a Christian context, it's the voice that expresses thanksgiving and appreciation, praise, gratitude, petitions, request. It's my voice that's processing out loud questions and seeking for answers. So the black pen is my voice to me. It's historical. It's context. The green pen is my voice to God or to my source of authority in life. And the third pen is red ink, and it is God's voice to me. And again, there's a faith statement here that says God speaks. My worldview directs me to Scripture, God's Word, the Bible. And it's not about trying to get him to say things that I want him to say to me, like, oh, by the way, Steve, there's going to be a new Mercedes out in the driveway. That would be called manipulation and probably foolishness at best. And if, you know, if there's someone who wants to try journaling from a business perspective, then you can just imagine that you're sitting down with someone who knows you, who really cares about you, who you respect as an authority, who you trust, and who only wants what's best for you, and they know how to help you get from here to there. What would they say to you? And that's what is captured as truth. That's what's captured as inspiration and direction and wisdom for the journey. So three voices, three pins, three colors. Black is historical. It's my voice to me. Green is my voice to God or to my authority. And the red is my voice again. No, I'm sorry. It's God's voice to me or the voice of authority to me. And it's amazing what happens when we begin to process on paper.
That is very, very powerful. And you said you also, do you use this as a tool in your coaching?
I do. Yeah, I just position it kind of like I did just now, that, you know, that the red pin is the one that, you know, will has to be converted. but it's there. It's that other voice. It's the voice that brings insight and discovery and truth and direction. And when I'm coaching people or teaching people how to use this idea of writing with three pins and three colors, when it comes to that, using the red pin, it's to write in the first person, just as if God or that expert or authority or that higher power is speaking to you, and it changes what happens.
What kind of feedback have you gotten from clients as they've begun this process?
Well, this is a part of my, what I would like to make a movement of. if I were to, I don't know if you can sit out to make a movement, maybe they just happen. But here's what I believe, and I'd kind of like to get into this for, I guess we have just maybe a few minutes more. It's what I call the best predictor of future success. And it's a long sentence, but I'll chop it up so that we can all get it. Again, it's the best predictor of future success. And, you know, one presupposition is that we have to define success ourselves based on our values and our purpose, our calling, and then our gifts and talents and all that. So having said that, the best predictor of future success is the ability and willingness to learn and change. It's achieved through consistent reflection on truth found in the story. So I'm going to repeat this a couple of times.
Thank you.
It is the ability and willingness to learn and change. That's the first part. The ability and willingness to learn and change. It's achieved through consistent reflection. Future success then is achieved through consistent reflection on truth found in the story. So the ability and willingness to learn and change, achieved through consistent reflection on truth found in the story. That is what I believe is the best predictor of future success.
So how would you like this movement to go?
Well, the conspiracy against our development as people, I mean, there's multiple levels of that. But one of them, on a very surface level, is just
the pace of life, the busyness of life. So if you draw three circles, you know, that typical thing where you have three circles and they all intersect in the middle,
mm-hmm.
or they all cross over the middle. So if you don't just draw on your paper three circles, there's four powers in this statement. And the first power is the power of purpose. And so one of those three circles represents the power of purpose. And, of course, that's the big why. That's why was I born? Why was I created? Why am I here on earth? What's my calling? What's my reason for being? And, you know, how does that move me beyond a paycheck? Or in a business, what's the bigger reason than making money? And I believe that every person that's born has purpose. And so it's our responsibility to find out what that purpose is, and when we find it, that is powerful to help move our lives in a positive, contributing, making a difference in the world sort of way. The second power is found in that first sentence, and it's the ability and willingness to learn and change, and it is the power of being human. I mean, out of all creation, we have willpower. We have both mind and heart, ability and willingness. We can not only learn, but we can actually change. That's amazing. Some days we may be more willing than other days.
Yes.
But we have, on a consistent basis, and when we use that being human aspect of who we are, that's a power like no one else in creation has, no other part of creation, the ability and willingness to learn and change. Then the third power, the power of story. And in our story, truth is going to be found. Truth will be revealed. And here I'm talking about reality, facts. It could be as simple as, to take it out of mystical language, it's as simple as my check bounced. Well, that's in my story. Okay, so now I have some feedback on how I'm managing my finances. In my story, I'm not sleeping well at night. Well, there's truth about that. That little bit of information is reality check. It's truth. It's trying to get our attention and say we need to make an adjustment. What's going on? I have high blood pressure, whatever it is. I have people that I have high turnover in my department or my company. I hate getting up to go to work in the morning. Well, that's a story. I'm in conflict with this person. Well, there's a story there. And in that story is truth. And when we find truth, it liberates us. And we were talking a while ago that if we're going to go from here to there, something has to end or we'll be stuck here. What liberates me from being stuck is when I'm willing to embrace truth, experience, feedback, success, and failure. So there's three powers, the power of purpose, the power of being, and the power of story. And the last power, which is just to draw one big circle around those three intersecting circles, is the power of space. Created space. And that's found in that middle line in the best predictor of future success. So we have the ability and willingness to learn and change, the power of being. We have been given the power of purpose on truth found in the story. The created space is that middle line where it says achieve through consistent reflection. So everybody has purpose. And everybody we're talking to is a human being, and every human being that we're talking to has a story. The question is whether or not
we are going to create space to consistently reflect on what's going on in my story. And that's where the conspiracy is. That's where the pushback is against our development. So, you know, I can't imagine anybody that will hear this if I ask you, do you need help accelerating life?
No.
Exactly. Right? No, I mean, the pace of life is just, it's crazy. So we don't need help accelerating the pace of life. But the question is, how can I accelerate my development as a person, as a leader? And we have to be intentional, and we have to actually, in order to accelerate, we have to slow down. Because when we create space, we are making a disciplined use of time, place, and resources to listen to the story for truth. And without the truth, I'm stuck. I'm in a box. I'm in self-limiting behavior style. And I don't get it. I don't know why people won't do what I want them to do. I don't know why my children won't listen. I don't know why. And there's something in my behavior that's holding me back. But I don't hear it. I don't see it. I don't recognize it because I don't have space to look at the story, to listen to the story, and receive the truth that will set me free.
That is very powerful. Is there another book coming based on this?
Yes, I think there is.
I think there might be.
Yeah,
there's more.
Yeah. And so then the question really just comes down to, what's the story that you want to write?
Yes. And again, sometimes we forget that we are writing our story every moment of every day.
Exactly.
And we give that power away.
Yes, yes. And we're personally responsible to write our story. And again, there are a lot of voices that speak out of our past and even out of, you know, today, voices that want to speak and take control of the pen and write the story for us. But we are privileged to write our own story. And not only what story do I want to write, but what must change in order to write that story.
Ah, and there we go back to, what are we holding on to so tightly, even when we don't like it, even when it's not effective?
Right.
It's keeping us from discovering or living the purpose,
mm-hmm.
or having the growth and development that
expanding.
We could have.
Yeah.
And I did extend the length of the show so we don't have to rush.
Okay.
Because you were in the midst of something that, wow, is what kept coming to mind as you were talking about that statement and the powers. And it's just like, oh my gosh, this is a model that takes a look at when people say, well, I'm too busy for, that idea of creating space to focus on self.
Mm-hmm.
Another part of my life, in addition to helping people have their best brains, and live their passions and being the CEOs of their lives and reclaiming that concept of I am writing my story. I also work with a life coach and a health coach. We have a program called Saving Superwoman. And a lot of what we focus on is that idea that we do get so busy and we are so self-critical that we forget how important it is to take care of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not selfish, it's self-full. To
right.
grow, to develop, to learn, and to model to the people around you. That's one of the strongest forms of influence, and I know you know that, is to look at how are we living, how are we communicating. And I also loved, and I want to go back to earlier when you were talking about what used to be called soft skills are now core skills. Because I think there are a number of leaders who have missed that when you start cutting budgets. Oh, well, they're soft skills. They're not important. Oh, but they are. They're very important. Did I lose you, Steve? I think I did. Let me get you back here. There we go. All of
yes.
a sudden, it was very quiet on the other end. I looked up and said, oh, his microphone is not red. Something happened.
Yeah, I never have trouble, and now this has happened twice. How odd is that?
Well, you know, it could just be where I am in Iowa, we were having almost record-setting high temperatures today, soon to be followed by about a 30, 40-degree temperature drop, so the weather
yeah.
is unchecked with it,
right.
at least in my end. So I think I was talking about how, you know, soft skills, the core skills, the ability to have that space, that reflection time. And there's power in journaling, power in writing, absolutely. And I will admit that I have done journaling on and off. I talk more than write, and finding that commitment, you've inspired me to do it, to try it again, to
Good.
Get out. I've got empty journal books. I like the three-color pen approach that I want to try. And I absolutely want to invite you back as you build your movement, because I absolutely would support what it is you want to do with that model. I think that would give people a visual
mm-hmm.
as well as something where it's a process of, you know what, I can be successful, and here's how I can do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you see that the thing about the story concept, there's a couple of things that make it powerful in coaching. One, sometimes it's easier to talk about the story than it is to talk about myself.
Yeah.
So I can see the story, but I can own up to what happened in the story after I've told the story. I'm just telling a story at this point. So somehow or another, it allows me to step out of it and have a little more objectivity. The other thing is that, you know, when we go into this concept that there's truth in the story, and if we will create space to consistently reflect on it, well, what got me here, well, 5 years ago, I got here because 5 years ago something happened, and I'm telling that story today because of everything that's happened the last 5 years. The question is, am I writing the story today that I will want to tell in 5 more years? And personal responsibility being what it is, when I accept personal responsibility and avoid being a victim or blaming or unduly complaining, when I accept personal responsibility for being here, then I can have power to write the story that will help me get there, so when I get there, I can tell the story.
And I think that you've hit on something else that's key, and that's accepting personal responsibility for
mm-hmm.
where you are at this moment in your life. Not that you caused it. You didn't tell them to let you go when they were making the budget cuts. However, it's that taking personal responsibility for what you say, how you think, how you feel, and what you do about
mm-hmm.
whatever it is that happens.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where somewhere along the line, for some of us, we lost that. And even on the news, and I talk about this with my 11-year-old, when they talk about, and the story that always comes to mind is when the bridges collapsed in the Twin Cities in Minnesota. And the first thing when that news was breaking was, who's to blame?
Yeah,
who's
right.
to blame? So
right.
we're teaching people to look for someone to blame, which is a different mindset when you're talking about personal responsibility and empowerment and accountability. Blame
mm-hmm.
isn't part of that.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, we're creating scary scenarios right now in our society.
Yes, and we're not rewarding people for taking responsibility. And so when people are punished, sometimes severely compared to whatever it was they did or didn't do, people don't want to raise their hand and say, well, that was me.
Mm-hmm.
Ah! And so how we decide to model that in our business, in our families, can have a huge impact on that story that we'll be telling 5 years from now.
Right.
So is there anything else that you wanted to add about the movement about the best predictor of future success, the ability and willingness?
I think it comes down to this idea of creating space, because here's the power of creating space. When I begin to create space for myself, that means I'm basically engaging in a process that allows me to change, right?
Right.
I mean, creating space, the way I define it, is a disciplined use of time, place, and resources so that we can listen to the story for truth. Once I get in the habit of creating space for myself, the powerful thing that can begin to happen from a leadership perspective is that I can create space for others. And so to illustrate that, let's just go into a story where there's a emotionally charged conversation going on and there's something up for grabs between two people. And, you know, it can become one of those yelling or matches, or I'm one of the people is going to, because they're going to run away to their office, they're going to flee. Or if it's one of those where two people are willing to stay and fight, they're going to fight. But neither one of those things are effective. What is effective is the ability to stay and engage with the other person to find solution, to find answer. So typically we fight or flight, but our goal is to be strong enough and leader of self enough that we stay and engage. So in that same situation, the person who is the leader can create space by simply asking not a yes-no question, but an open-ended question. And that's, I'm opening up a whole another can of worms here, but when we ask open-ended questions, we create space for people to stop and think. And when we ask yes-no questions, we just keep the conversation accelerated.
I'm writing.
Yes.
And I always have to go back and listen to these interviews too, to get the pieces that I missed, because they're filled with such thought-provoking tools and ideas. And I think that's, as even I've used training open-ended questions in training trainers and in training in sales and in a lot of different areas, that's a piece that I have never included with the power of open-ended questions.
Mm-hmm. I believe that it is one of the top three leadership skills is the ability to ask open-ended questions at the right time.
Then you know I was going to ask you what the other two were, don't you?
And I don't know what they are, but that's okay. But it's got to be at least, maybe the other is the ability to think.
Okay. Then we could just leave it as one of the top.
Yeah.
Instead of the top three. Yeah, the ability to think, the ability to recognize when emotional hijack is happening and mm-hmm. be able to step back and to bring your best brain to the discussion
mm-hmm.
is also important. That's one of my personal things, is to recognize when you're not bringing your best brain, what are you doing and what can you do so that you can be at your best.
Mm-hmm.
So as we're winding down, Steve, is there something you wished I would have asked you about that I haven't?
Where can you get my book?
Oh, yes. Besides on Amazon or Barnes & Noble?
It's on Amazon, yeah. The People Project is on Amazon, and so is The Journey.
Okay.
The Journey, Personal Notes from the Father. Either one of those are there.
And I will add that to the show notes, because I know that the book, The Journey, is not in the show notes right now, but it will be.
That's fine, yeah.
So, yes, if you can get them from the online ordering system. And
yes,
if people want to connect with you, that's always one of my closing questions. What is the best way for them to connect with you? If they listen to this later, as many of my listeners do,
mm-hmm.
if there's a question about the process, any of the processes we've talked about, or a question about connecting with you, what are the ways that you would recommend they connect with you?
Well, they can go to my website, which is nextlevelexecutivecoaching.com. nextlevelexecutivecoaching.com, and it's on the show page as well. My telephone number, though, is 918-296-7785. 918-296-7785, and I'm in the Central Time Zone.
Awesome. And so, finally, we've talked about some things that obviously are your passions as we've gone through our show tonight. If there were the one or two critical ideas that you would want to leave listeners with at the end of our talk together, what one or two ideas would you choose to end with?
I would dare people, or challenge, I don't know which you prefer, but I would encourage people to begin to create space and take pen and paper in hand and begin to play with, and even if it's just 5 minutes, just to download some of their thoughts to paper, just to process it. And so within that call to journaling, there's also that call to create some space. And, you know, the beautiful thing from my perspective about coaching, when you go back to what the definition of created space is, it's time, place, and resources. Well, you and I set aside a certain time or we wouldn't be on this phone call. So we had this phone meeting because we took a disciplined approach to time, place, and resources. And in doing that, it's in the spirit of pursuing truth. It's listening to the story. It's learning from each other's stories. And so coaching is kind of that high-level created space where, with the support of someone who is objective and outside of myself, I get perspective and I've got a time, place, and resources to stop and listen. Then the next thing is to begin to practice that on a regular basis, ideally daily, but, you know, some form of regularity where I take a few minutes every day to just capture my day, whether I'm a morning person or a night person, or, you know, I do that over a lunch or whatever, but just be consistent about it. Make it an appointment. Anything that we do, we typically have to make an appointment for today, or it doesn't happen. Does not happen. And then the third thing is that we just down and driving it down, so it's from a coaching level down to a daily level. The goal is that we drive it into real time. We were just talking about was how we can actually create space in a moment that when I would be inclined to fight or run away and hide, I can actually stay and engage because I took control of the pace of life and created space. And that word pace is in that word space. In order to create space, we have to take control of the pace. And that's it.
Taking a deep breath. Thank you, Steve, so much for sharing so many powerful ideas and thought-provoking concepts and strategies, and the challenge to listeners to, or yes, whichever word you'd like, to try journaling, to try to create the space on a regular basis and just notice the difference that happens over a period of time. Now, 2 days may not notice it, but give yourself some time. And as always, I challenge my listeners to take action on at least one idea they heard every segment, because they've exchanged their time of their life that they'll never get back for the learning that they've taken on in spending time with me and or my guests. And so, again, Steve, I'm so honored that you chose the commitment of time and space to share with me and with my listeners. And I hope that we have an opportunity to talk again when the next book comes out, or when you have a next insight that you want to share with people, I hope that you'll come back.
Thank you. I'll be glad to do that.
Thank you. And until next time, keep in mind one of my favorite quotes from Pericles, which says, "What you leave behind is not what is engraved in stone monuments, but is woven into the lives of others." Very timely with our conversation tonight.
Yes.
So thank you, Steve, for being here. Thank you, listeners, for investing your life. And may you continue to make a positive difference in the lives that you touch. Until next time, stay safe.
Thank you for listening to Spark Radio with Miss Melanie. Please share this show link with those you believe would enjoy and benefit from listening. We invite you to join us for upcoming shows with special guests and more sparks. May a spark you heard ignite a positive change in your life. Good day.